Hi everybody, welcome to Season 4, Episode 21 of the Hard Truth Inside the Football Industry podcast with me, Philip Eidson, and Darren McAnthony, Chairman and Owner of Peterborough United. We're recording this the morning after we being Bradford, lost in the EFL Trophy semi-final, so our Hard Truth final wasn't to be. And so, Darren, you might need to pick me up a little bit today. I'm still gutted.
Yeah, I'm gutted for you, you know, because obviously I watched it. I had Liverpool on one screen, I had Bradford on, but I'm not going to lie, I was watching the Bradford game more than the Liverpool game. And it was the most one-sided game I've ever seen in my life. I was actually very impressed with how dominant Bradford were. First time I've properly watched them, and playing on that pitch. I mean, I thought our pitch was fucking bad, but you guys are running us close.
Yeah, no one can complain about London Road anymore.
Yeah, they're handing out raspberries, you know, like pitches. You know? It's like whatever else got those awards that aren't like the anti-Oscars.
Yeah.
Ours looks like Wembley compared to what you played on last night. But I thought you dominated the game. It was really funny. Like, it hit 90 with 5 minutes going up. My wife came over and sat down for some reason. I just said, Wickham are going to score. I just know they're going to score because it's just, you just dominated and looked like you just ran out of belief just in the last 5-6 minutes.
And steam, like they just put everything into it. I was really surprised at 5 minutes as well. I was hoping, you know, 1 or 2 minutes, but five.
Go to penalties. Yeah, but in all fairness, that goalkeeper probably would have saved every penalty thrown at him.
And I wouldn't have fancied, you know, as much as he used to be an agile goalkeeper, our 38-year-old goalkeeper coach at penalties, you know, he's not going to be the fastest reactions.
Yeah, so you sold your young asset, and I didn't realize you were using the 38-year-old in goal since he left. Is that right? You didn't get a replacement?
So no, we sold Harry Lewis. We brought Sam Walker in. So Sam Walker's been the goalkeeper, but he's cup tied. And so, I mean, we've been playing Colin Doyle all the way through.
Okay.
But, you know, just to give Harry Lewis a rest when Harry Lewis was there.
Yeah.
But the other keeper was cup tied anyway, so we didn't have a choice.
Fair enough. No, it was just, I was gutted for you. You know, you did not, you know, and you know, look, I'm not going to say anything derogatory about Wickham, you know, because I'll leave that up to you if you want, but I'm not, you know, because I don't, you know, they just tend to use everything, you know what I mean? Like,
you don't want to tempt fate and give them a...
Well, no, I'm done with superstition and fate. At the end of the day, you know, Wickham have won 3-22 and we lost 5-2 to them. That's, after watching last night, I'm still astounded at how. You know, because you basically had all the balls. So whether they had an off night or whatever, I don't know. Whether they raise the game and they play us, that just means we have to raise our game twice as much when we play them. You know, so of course I wanted Bradford for the Hard Truth final, but I also partly wanted Wickham too. Mm. You know, because they've inflicted obviously a lot of pain on us.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, and we're going to have to be at our best to do the business. But let's talk Bradford. I mean, it was just, you couldn't hit a barn door, could you?
I mean, that's the thing. We'd still be playing today and we wouldn't have scored. And it was just one of those, you know, you could see it. And like you said, you know, when Natalie came in and you told her about, I mean, I had exactly the same conversation here with Beth, my wife. And, you know, and she was, well, you know, don't be so pessimistic. It's like, I've seen this before.
It's football.
I've seen this record before.
It's football. Yep. It's like, you know, obviously when the shit's going against you, we had it last week against Blackpool. They scored with a deflection that 9 times out of 10 goes into the stands. And, you know, again, and when things like, you always feel it's going against you, it never goes for you, those things.
Right.
You know, the amount of times Bradford, I mean, it must have had 25 like entries into the other person's box. I mean, it really was dominant. And, you know, the only positive was watching it. I thought, you know, not bad, to be fair. I thought Bradford were actually very good.
It's the best we've played for a long time, I think.
Yeah, I was genuinely impressed. I thought, you know, well, there's a bit of a team here.
Mm-hmm.
And actually playing, you know, as much as they could try and play. And you know, maybe you had to because Cook wasn't in the team, so you just had to play differently. But, you know, which is sometimes where you want to get away from a target man.
It's like you know, with Johnson Clark Harris, isn't it? You know, you take out the target man and suddenly the easy outlet isn't there anymore.
Yeah, you start playing.
You've got to figure a different way to get it into the box.
Yeah, you know, but you know, I'm good for you, you know, because obviously it would have been great. You would have been at Wembley. We would have done, like, you know, podcasts from Wembley. But, you know, it is what it is, and that's football, and it's cruel. And, you know, fuck. But anyhow, so... We'll have to go and try and do our business and try and win that trophy. And, you know,
on a happy note, you got to Wembley. So congratulations.
Yeah. And if there's any Bradford fans out there, real hard truthers, die-harders, you're welcome to buy some tickets. Well, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but it'd be great if you became Peterborough fans for the day and, you know, came along, you know, day out of Wembley. And we could do it every bit of support we can get. And obviously, you know, it helps with the ticket sales, you know what I mean, kind of thing. But
we need to do half and half Bradford and Peterborough scouts for the final.
Yeah, we do. Post-Bradford flags, our scars, can you imagine? So, you're absolutely correct. No, we were ourselves on Tuesday. We were, you know, and that's been needed, regardless of cups, leagues, whatever, you know. We lost on Saturday, you know, speaking to the manager afterwards, you know, I didn't, you know, usually, good or bad, I'll always leave a message and then he'll ring me later. And sometimes the message, I'll, you know, moan because I just get things off my chest and he's used to that. And I just messaged him and said, oh, I'm not going to pile on. We have to own this. We decided we were going to, everyone together, go down this route.
Yep.
So we have to own that. When you go down this route of young, that this is what can happen.
Yep.
You know, they're going to have a sticky patch. They're going to lose confidence. They're going to lose games of football. And, you know, we've had that little run and, you know, what's been really refreshing is the players have stuck together. But most importantly, the message, I think, you know, it's a game we should have been 4-0 up at halftime. We're 1-0 up. We come out in the second half. We're under no pressure. Our goalie gives away a stupid penalty. He was very good the other night, by the way. And then all of a sudden, we got nervous. Young group gets nervous on a bad run. It's 1-1. Yeah. Blackpool didn't have another shot. The 93rd minute, they go down. They shoot from the edge of the box. Fucking ridiculous deflection. You know, 4 minutes injury time, by the way. What do I always say when we're not winning or drawing or whatever? It's, you know, but if we're winning, it's... And they nicked the game. And we're still a better team, you know, and they nicked the game. And it's another loss at home. It's another loss. And you're thinking of the players, oh, God. And to be fair, like, you know, I think Darren and the staff just said to the players, look, let's reset here. Because there was a period in that game at home in the league for 20 minutes, 10 minutes. We started kicking long, which isn't what we do.
Yeah,
like we don't have a target, man. If you're kicking long, you may as well walk over and hand the ball to the opposition.
It's like panicking, basically.
Yeah, and we had our goalkeeper kicking long. It was just, what are you doing? Like, it doesn't matter if they're pressing you. Play around them. It doesn't matter if you give the ball away. Keep playing around them because that's what we're set up to do. So we make a mistake like we did against Wickham. We gave them like multiple goals by trying to play around them and give the ball away. That's the price we pay. But what we're not going to do is kick it fucking long. We're not going to stop doing what we're doing, and we stopped what we were doing. So I think the message from the manager was very simple to the players after that league loss in the fourth in a row. This is who we are. This is what we're doing. Whether we have 15 games left, 20 games left, don't veer off course in what we're trying to do. Win, lose, or draw. That's the identity. That's the style. Stick to that fucking style. We will win games of football again. That's just the way it goes. Do you know what I mean? And to be fair, not an ideal place to have to go to again after losing on Saturday. You know, I think Blackpool have lost twice all season at home. Once was to us. And, you know, you're in a cup semi-final, you know, youngest team in the cup. And you're thinking, oh, geez, this could be. But to be fair, after 10 minutes, I was like, no, we're back. Like,
you played back.
Yeah. Yes. Without sounding arrogant.
No, you had the... It was like our game a little bit. The first, like, you had the chances, you didn't take them. I'm thinking you got to take some of these chances, and you took one of the chances. And from then on, you know, it was, it should have been more than it was.
Yeah. It was one way traffic. I mean, I don't really remember Jed having to make many good saves. It was all kind of right in front of him. And, you know, I thought we handled it great. I thought the changes were good. I thought every player to a man was excellent. I thought we played out from the back when they tried to press. We didn't get involved in long balls. We didn't start panicking. We didn't start giving the ball away. I thought we were sublime. And I thought the football was a joy to watch. And I thought, right, that's us. You know, that's us going away and winning at Derby. That's us doing what we've been doing earlier on in the season, you know, going away and winning at Barnsley. So just stick to that. Stick to that. We'll have a good end to the season. Veer from that, player-wise, management-wise, coaching-wise, we won't.
Yeah.
So it was nice. I was really happy for the staff. You know, when the third goal went in, I turned around to my wife who was cooking, and I said, first time I've ever done this, with 2 minutes left in injury time, we're going to Wembley. You know, so, and then I went and, you know, spent 20 grand on tickets to get my daughters and my wife across to come to the game, you know. So that's how much BA was for like 3 days to get in, you know. I'm really, really happy for the staff, really happy for the manager, the players. You know, and what it meant to them and the excitement of a young group all screaming about Wembley. Because not a lot of footballers get to play at Wembley. And they have to make the most of it, you know. With the bonuses they've got in their contracts, I will lose money on the final when they win. most people would say, oh, it's better off they lose because, you know, you yeah. make money.
You get the money, like, you don't pay the bonus.
No, I don't care. I'm happy to lose money for them to win. You know, they've got bonuses, they've got whatever else. They pick up a hefty chunk for winning that cup. So I'd be delighted to pay them whatever the net deficit will be from that final. Particularly now Bradford aren't going with the bigger ticket sales and whatever else. So ourselves and Wickham aren't going to sell the amount of tickets Bradford would have. So it's great. And now I'm on with Liz today because now everyone wants tickets. We get X amount for the Royal Box. We get X amount for the Bobby Moore. I'm going to have to buy boxes now because we can't get all our employees. We got the players want the lion's share of the hospitality tickets for their families. I get that. Mm-hmm. So there's all those things now we're trying to navigate. And I think the manager doesn't want any distractions. He kind of wants that nailed down now so the players aren't worried about that going into games. So, So it'll be really, really good. Again, gutted Bradford aren't there. But I will say this for Bradford. The way you were playing the other night, whatever else, if you play like that and you got 15 games left and you're, what, 5 points from the playoffs?
Two.
Fuck, you've got a chance of gatecrashing this, baby. There's always one team. There's always one team that comes from, like, fucking nowhere. You've got a chance of gatecrashing in there.
I mean, that's how I came away from it, was hopefully that's a wake-up call for everybody. You know, hopefully the manager afterwards has to say, look, you know, that obviously shows what we're capable of. We've got, you know, 15 more of those games between now and the end of the season.
You're absolutely 2 points,
and yes, there's, you know, basically 10 teams within 2 points of the playoffs,
but, absolutely,
you know, make it yours, grab hold of this, be aggressive, you know, don't sulk and feel sorry for yourself if things don't go to plan, because you've got the ability.
What he's done, he's dug in defensively. And he's obviously built the platform off you keeping clean sheets and being really, really difficult to score against. Like, defensively, you're strong, you're physical, you're big. What I liked actually was you could handle Wickham's directness. You could handle a direct team. There was no, because your centre halves are so physically imposing, mm-hmm. you could actually handle that, eat it up, take it, and then put it down on the floor, because you've got two midfielders in front, one of them whose legs are probably gone, who basically can pass the ball around. And you know what? You've got a chance. Watching you last night, I was thinking to myself, do you know what? If I was a betting man and I'm not allowed to bet, I would imagine the odds are quite long on Bradford. But because of that experience as well, you've got on the team, you've got some good experience, and the manager, I actually fancy you to cause a bit of an upset there.
When we have Kevin McDonald and Richie Smallwood playing together in the middle, which we've only had once or twice so far, you can just see the difference that makes in controlling the game, because the smart footballers, and yes, like you say, Kevin McDonald's not that mobile, but we talked about it last week. He can, you know, he's got the vision, and he can put the ball wherever he wants to put the ball.
He's silky.
And that's
if you had two greyhounds basically running in behind all day long, with him putting balls in, you know, you'd be one of the most dangerous teams, because he could find if you had two Ricky J. Jones up front basically with him putting the ball in, you'd terrify fucking teams. They'd never leave.
They just put it over the top on a plate for
all day long. You'd have open team red cards. You know, you know, going your way, because teams would be like taking down that striker, and people wouldn't want to leave their own half. There would be no high press from the opposition team because they'd be terrified. Obviously, you go a different way. You go back basically with what you use wide players and Cook as your target man. So you play a certain different way. But if you ever wanted to remodel and change, you actually have two ideal midfielders to play with complete pace up front. You could terrify the life out of fucking League Two if you wanted to. Just an observation.
Well, let's see. I mean, we brought Tyreek Wright back on loan. He's been on for the last 5 minutes because he's been injured for a couple of games. He's got the pace. Now we have Kavanagh from... Now, it's not like he's a Ricky J. Jones from a pace perspective, but it's something a little bit different.
Yeah.
And, you know, he looks useful. He's not afraid of shooting. Now, at the back, what's interesting is, you know, we've really... we brought Jonathan Tompkinson in on loan from Norwich. He was the number 31, I think he is. And it took him a while to get in the team, you know, just because we had...
he's solid.
But he is. He reminds me of a young Dean Richards, when we had Dean Richards you know, as a kid back in the day.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
He's got the composure. You know, it's tough for anyone to get through him. He's not afraid to go running. You know, you find him on the wing here and there, so he's not afraid.
No. I was very impressed with him. Now I know he's on loan from Norwich. That's good. I'll have to add him to my list in the summer. <I'm only joking.
laughs> It's funny. I was going to ping you and say, "Hey, watch that number 31."
No. Next year. He was excellent. You know what I mean? He's like, he had a lot of attributes. You know what I mean? So Norwich do some good young players. They were used to buying a lot of talent. So no, very good. And you're right. he was comfortable anywhere across the back line, and he was moving around a lot. His rotation was excellent. So, look, to be fair to Alexander, he seems to have found something. You seem to have found a way to play. You seem to have built that based on clean sheets, and then you know you've got a threat at the other end of the pitch. So I think you're going to be a very dangerous team at the end of the season. How many games do you have at home? Because obviously that pitch is a bit of an equaliser because of how heavy it is.
Yeah, that's a good question. And while I don't know exactly the answer, my gut feel would be that we've got more at home than away because of games that have been called off.
And are you playing the pitch better than the opposition at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, it was worse than it's not been good, but it was worse than it has been last night because of all the rain
has helped
as well. Yeah. I would say that what was interesting about last night is up until now, we almost negated the pitch because we were just playing hoofball. Last night was the first time we actually tried to play it on the ground for a while. And I thought they did well on a.
I thought you figured it out better than Wickham on the ground. I thought like you knew all the little angles, you knew where it was going to stop rolling or bouncing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I actually thought you played it well. So if you can continue to do that and you don't end up getting heavy legs where you're winning games, you know, having to rely on having to score late, because I thought you did look tired the last 10 minutes because of the lack of Wickham didn't have to do a lot. You know, only the last 10 minutes they suddenly came into the game. So. No, look, for Bradford fans, I'd be optimistic that you've got a chance. There's so many fucking teams in League Two that have a chance. It's ridiculous.
It is crazy how close it is. I mean, I don't think I can remember anything
it's mental.
That close. And whether it's just for one spot in the playoffs or whether it's, you know, whether the gap closes between that last spot and Barrow, who are in sixth, but you have between Harrogate. So we got Harrogate in seventh spot on 48 points, and you got Walsall in 16th on 45 points.
It's mental. Somebody will make a run.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. So, you know, it will happen.
And so we've got Barrow away on Saturday and then Notts County home and then Doncaster home. You've got Cambridge away, Exeter home, Northampton home. So you're looking forward to that derby game against Cambridge on Saturday.
Yeah, Cambridge have been doing really well. Really tough to beat. Been winning some games. Even Bolton struggled to beat them the other night. Their manager left yesterday, which was a surprise.
Yeah,
but you know, obviously he's Millwall through and through, so I can understand they pulled a bit of a Fergie there, bringing him back. Hopefully, it's a good move for Millwall because I like the club, I like the previous owner, and his son's now running it. Look, we have a derby on Saturday. Everything goes out the window. Doesn't matter if one team have won 10 in a row and the other one whatever. Like derby is a great equaliser. You know, I've seen enough derbies over the years. You know what I mean? Like you just can't pick a favour. So we went there last year, never showed up. And I would expect us to show up this time. So I'm hoping the other night has given the players that belief that, look, we have to go and attack every game. You know, because we've fallen so far behind, we have to now give it our best shot and try and win every single game that we go into and be on the front foot. But most importantly, stick to being us. That'll be a tasty game. Be great for our fans. You know, we got them, we got Northampton, we got a couple of juicy games coming up that are like in the vicinity and whatever else. Our fans, by the way, we had 500 of them travel to Blackpool, and they're like, we're fucking magnificent. I've seen some of them were swimming naked in the ocean the next day, you know, after that. So for them, I was really happy because, you know, I think there's been a few naysayers popping up, you know, during the recent run, and a few of the real hardcore fans who message me all the time, you know, on Insta were just like, I just can't stand social media, you know, and I know some of that was getting to some of our players. We had to pull them off and say, stop paying attention to social media, good or bad. Stay away from it. So unfortunately, every football club has that. But our fans have been really good.
Do you find that because your team is so young that it impacts them more than more of a seasoned professional?
I think they're a different group in the way that it shouldn't. I think a couple of them it has, you know what I mean, and whatever. But not all of them. I think even though they're young, they're quite a savvy group. You know, if you spoke to them and spent time with them, you'd understand that. You know, you've got some of them like Archie Collins is 24, but he's got an older head in his shoulders. You've got, no, they're a really good group. Harrison's obviously our captain. You know, he's 22, but he's growing up all the time. He's been around it now so long. I think they're now getting used to it. You know that you're at Peterborough, you're expected to score goals. You're expected to be linked with multi-million pound moves. You've got to get used to being in that paddock per se. And that's just what it's like being a posh when you're in League One. So, we got massive clubs in our league. We always know that. You know, everyone's expectations, bar ours, we're all, you know, we're not going to do that great this season. Yeah. So, you know, we're doing okay. You know, we haven't won for a while, but we'll start winning again.
And you mentioned Harrison. I wanted to give a shout out to Harrison Burrows on the game at Blackpool. So, obviously, a kid, you know, going to Wembley as a supporter the last time that you were in the final. And, two goals, captain. I mean, he's really, and some of the criticism I was reading about him at the start of the season, oh, we can't play left back, wow, and we can't do that.
My wife said it the other day, that at Christmas, she was sitting there when Darren was falling out with a fan in the stadium. I think it was during the Reading game, where there were like fans digging out Harrison because he wasn't having a great 10 minutes at left back. I mean, he's not a left back. He's the best left back outside the Championship, you know, by a mile. I mean, he's got, I don't know, 10 assists. He's got, is it 12 assists and nearly 10 goals? I mean, come on. But he's been doing that throughout his career. Even the season we went up and he came on for Dan Butler a lot of the time, he ended up with like 7 or 8 assists. In the Championship, he had 10 goals and assists combined in his first season in the Championship. So we know what we've got, you know, and he's a strong lad character-wise, you know. So
what's his ceiling?
I think he can play as high as he wants. People will say he doesn't have pace. I've seen players in the Premier League without pace do very well. He's technically top-notch. He can play. He's got the attributes technically as a Premier League player, and I don't want to put massive pressure on him. He's 22. He's played, I think, 140-odd games already, so he's durable. He is technically excellent. He creates goals for fun. He scores goals. He's a proper player in a dressing room that you want. You're not captain of your hometown club at 22 without having something about you. So I don't want to put pressure on him and say, oh, he can play for Real Madrid or he can play for whatever else. But I think, you know, he could go as high as he wants to. I think he's actually getting quicker. I think those things you can improve. I think there's, you know, his physicality is he's now more physical than he was, say, 2-3 years ago in the Championship where he might get pushed off. Are there going to be times a winger will take him to the cleaners for 10 minutes? Yeah, but don't they do that to the best in the world? You know, I've seen some of the best left backs in the Premier League see that happen to them. I've seen Trent Alexander-Arnold have that happen to him. But what Trent is known for is his passing ability, mm-hmm, and his creation ability and whatever. So he could play wherever he wants. But for now, you know, he's not in a rush to leave. And obviously, we had a lot of people in for him in the window. We're just delighted he's our captain. So it'd be lovely to see him to actually get a trophy for somebody who was at Wembley when he was 10 years old. You know, to actually captain his hometown club to it. So that's on us to do that. But no, he's a wonderful young player. Absolutely wonderful. All that stuff from some of the fans. He's not a left back. He's not this. He's not that. He's one of our own. Just get behind him. And that's all I've ever said. You get behind these players enough, whether it's Ricky, whether it's him, and give them the time. They're bloody good players. Like, yeah, bloody good players.
And most clubs would kill for a 22-year-old homegrown captain that you can get behind, because that's what that's what it's all about, is, you know, one of your own coming through, young lad, captaining the team, you know, doing so and doing very well while he's doing it.
It's like, you know, the Ricky thing. He's 21, he's playing number 9 for the first time in his life this season in the league. Yeah, you know, he's got 11 goals for the season. You know, he could end up with 15, 16 plus goals. Should he have had 30? Probably. But it's his first season. But let me tell you right now, there's probably 40 clubs between League 2 and League 1, and probably at least 7 or 8 to 10 clubs, yeah, in the Champ that would absolutely love to have him in their squad, yeah, tomorrow. So sometimes we don't know what we have or appreciate it.
I think you've been spoiled by Johnson Clark Harris. Supporters have been spoiled by Johnson Clark Harris's scoring record. So you look and think that 30 goals a season or 35 goals a season is what the top marksman should be getting. Well, actually, 10 to 15 goals a season is a really good return. Especially for a kid.
Yeah, and you're playing up front on your own, and you're playing in a certain style, and you're playing where there'll be times in the game he won't have the ball, but his job is to press. So we're like running him into the ground because he's been unselfish, and a lot of strikers don't play that way. But I would also argue that if he got to 15 this season, I'd put money on him getting 25 plus next season, because it's an evolution as a striker. And again, he's 21. So it's like there's improvement. This is the first season he's played fully fit all season in his young career. You know, he's always had like bumps, grazes. He's played out wide. He's not been quite sure. Now Malik's got on the team. There's good competition for him. You know, but still, what I loved was Ricky came on and he basically won us that game at Blackpool late on, because he wins that penalty. No striker in the Football League gets to that ball. No striker. When you look at the distance that he made up, you know, their goalkeeper probably shit himself. Do you know what I mean? When he saw him running. If that was any other striker, it would have been in the goalie's hands. And that's what he has the ability to do. So, again, we all get upset when strikers miss chances and people, and we missed the boatload the other night. But that's what it's like. I guess if we had a load of 27-year-olds, they wouldn't miss those chances. But you know what? The 27-year-olds or 28-year-olds, we might be playing that way. So,
well, I can tell you after last night, 27 and 20-year-olds miss plenty of chances.
Yeah, we're in League 1 and League 2 for a reason, yeah, right? So, you know, it is what it is, you know. So, That's it. We got to get back on the horse now in the league. And I think we win one, we win a lot in a row. So we just have to get the next one. And, you know, big derby game before I fly to Dubai. And, yeah, that'll be exciting. And then obviously we have a bit of a break on Tuesday. And then it's like relentlessly back to back, back to back, back to back. So looking forward to it.
And while you're watching our game on one TV, you're watching Liverpool and Luton on the other TV.
Yeah. I, you know, when I saw the team, I was kind of like panicking because Liverpool have got more injuries than I don't know what. I've never seen a team lose so many players. I mean, I don't know what's going on with their sports science department. The amount of muscle injuries they seem to have, they have a lot of injuries. And how on earth? Well, again, it's Jurgen Klopp. It's the only reason they're top of the Premier League, because they've got no right to be top of the Premier League with the amount of players they keep losing. They've lost the best right back in the world constantly. They've lost like some of the new midfielders they brought in constantly. They've lost three of their front five, you know, that they have to pick from attacking wise. I mean, Andy Robertson was out for 4 months. The backup left back was out. Now one of the best goalkeepers in the world is out. It's just relentless. But last night you were thinking banana skin time. This is where like the Premier League title race is run, you know,
especially when Luton scored.
Yeah, and then and Liverpool weren't great, and Diaz and Gakpo, you know, looked like, you know, League One strikers, to be fair, in that half, the amount of chances they were missing. But what I like about them is, like all good players, you don't give up. You don't give up. And they both scored in the second half. Harvey Elliott was getting booed, I think, in the first half. Klopp was losing his shit because Elliott made a few mistakes. He didn't give up. He scored. And that's a great message to footballers. When it's all going against you, there's two halves of football to play. And the good thing about Liverpool, what I like about them is they're relentless in the fact that they go behind and they still believe they'll score goals. They've done late goals. They've done, and then, you know, they scored quick goals and then it was never in doubt. And Luton, you know, really laid a scratch on them in the second half. So it's an exciting title race. I still think Man City by 10. I've said that all season. But it'll be fascinating to see the run in. If he can get his players back fit, and I worry because I think he's now lost Jota for months because of a knee injury, and he's one who just can't seem to stay fit. Nunez and Salah are the two most important ones. If you can get them back for the cup final and they stay fit for the rest of the season, there is an outside chance Liverpool nick the Premier League.
Well, they're in a stronger position than I think many people thought at the start of the season. When you looked at, you know, this is going to be a consolidation year, and next year is the year that they go for.
Listen, what a fantastic swan song would be for Europe. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've always said I think they'll win some cups. Hopefully they win the League Cup on Sunday and start that off and, you know, win a European trophy, win the FA Cup, and then run Man City close. But it's going to be a really interesting kind of final 2 months of the season, 3 months or whatever.
Now, you talked about a game of two halves. And, you know, I think we've all been there and seen either our team or the opposition team where you dominate one half and then, you know, it's just completely changed over in the second half. Or you're awful in the first half and you come out a different team in the second half. And, you know, the legend is it's the manager in there throwing teacups at halftime. What does it usually, what goes on in that, you know, when you have such a, is it just mentally the players? It's not necessarily a management, you know, the manager doing something different or motivating or encouraging or,
I think it can be a mixture of things. I think even the players themselves sorting themselves out. I think sometimes, you know, things can happen in a game in the second half where you're dominant, like we were on Saturday against Blackpool, and then a stupid penalty allows them back in the game, and then it spooks you and you stop playing well. We dominated Charlton at their place. It was the most one-sided game ever in the first half. And then they came out and we made a mistake. And again, we were for 15 minutes. It was suddenly like Charlton. It was chalk and cheese. Sometimes a manager can make five changes. So you got half a team out there that's changed. Can make tactical changes. Sometimes it can be a referee's decision. That's football. That's the beauty about the game. It's never over.
Small things, even that insignificant in the moment, but that impact the psyche.
Yeah, correct. Like the other night, Blackpool brought on two very good players and you're thinking, oh, geez, this could change the game. But we handle it well. Sometimes if you don't handle it well, it can change the game. But if you don't let it change the game and you get on top of it and you basically, like, you know, smother them, then obviously it makes the crowd get up. And sometimes it can be the crowd effect as well. So, you know, what you saw last night from you guys was, to give Wickham, you know, some credit. Wickham haven't had the best season. They haven't had the best results. But you saw a bunch of resilient players, very experienced, who basically just, you know, they what would the right word be? They soaked up the pressure all game long and took that one chance when it came. And you were never going to score against them then. Because that's them. They are just strong, resilient, you know, dig in, get results. You know, yeah, people, we like Wigan, we don't like Wigan. They are what they are, and what they are very good at is doing exactly what I just said. So you have to give them credit, congratulate them getting to that cup final, because that was probably the most one-sided game they've played for a long time. And after watching us lose 5-2 to them, I couldn't believe what I was watching. So, you know, at the end of the day, that's football.
Yeah, and you knew that they had that. That was what I was always scared of. You knew that they get an opportunity, they've got the quality. So it's just about, you know, you only need one opportunity when you've got, you know, when you've got quality.
And usually with them at set pieces, you know, or it's, you know, whatever else. But listen, that's football, and that's what can happen. That's the beauty of the game. So, yeah, so on we go.
So a couple of other things that I want to just touch on today. I know that we're kind of running around in meetings and things, but we wanted to make sure that we recorded a little bit today is Dan Ashworth. So Dan Ashworth is now on gardening leave from Newcastle, said that he wants to leave. Now, Jim Ratcliffe, I think, said that a year and a half of gardening leave based on his contract is what's going on. And how stupid that is, because, you know, that's, they don't want to pay any money for him. I'm interested in a couple of things. One, just your kind of take on the situation, but two, valuations of non-playing members of staff. Because what they're basically saying is, give us 20 million and we'll release him from his contract.
20 million for a non-football player is ridiculous, in my opinion. It's absolutely ridiculous. And it comes down to contract law, in my opinion. So, you know, I've had people come for some of our staff, and I'm like, well, can we not ask for money? And I'm told, just, you know, not really, and this could get messy, and just let them go. And I see things like this, and I'm like, wow, you know, it depends. I mean, if he's, I don't know, if he's on 3-4 million quid salary, and he's got 6 months left, usually, or a year and a half left, usually that is really the cost of, like, buying him out if you wanted to, if he wanted to leave. So I think what Newcastle have to do is some common sense here. You're going to have a person gardening leave. You're going to have to hire someone else. You're going to have all of that aggro. And same with Man United. This doesn't need to be prolonged. As long as Newcastle are sensible, what is a sensible fee? I don't even think 5 million should be a fee. I mean, these aren't playing assets. You know, I mean, these are technical directors who can be great 1 year, especially, and then awful 2 years later. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Manager's a different thing. But you're getting a manager, that's somebody who's like, affects results. I get recruitment can affect it, whatever else. And this seems to be a new thing, because I've seen Brighton's, you know, guy, Paul Jules' son, he's left for Chelsea.
Sam.
They've already, like, taken, yes, Sam, they've taken some people. So, obviously, I know Dan, he came from Peterborough, you know, through at our club at some stage in his career. It'll be fascinating to see how it plays out. But if Radcliffe's saying that United will wait 18 months, I think that's ridiculous, because they need to get on with it. They need to get on with doing what they're doing. And if Newcastle think for 18 months he's not going to do a little bit of work, I'd be amazed, you know. So that I think there's a lot of poker playing going on, a lot of bluffing going on. The message would be for every technical director from now on, get a release clause in your contract when you join a big club.
It's interesting because, you know, as a regular employer, sorry, as a regular employee in a, and I use air quotes, you know, regular job, then there's no trading of, there's no buying out contracts when you decide you want to quit and go and work for another company.
Correct.
And so you can kind of understand it from a playing side, because there's a playing asset. Oh,
well, they're an asset. Yeah, of course.
But it's
of course
a different type of employer-employee relationship when you're trading a footballer rather than a, you know, a non-playing member of staff.
It's mad. It's the world we live in now. But I do think there will end up being, you know, release clauses in all these people's contracts. And you know, they obviously want that. I'm amazed they didn't go for Dougie Friedman at Crystal Palace. I know he lives quite close to Alex Ferguson, do you know what I mean? So I'm amazed they didn't go for him, because he's done really well at Palace. So I think where United are with the new ownership, with their minority stake and now running the football side, I don't think they have 18 months to waste. I think if you're that person, Radcliffe, and your team, you want to get in there and just hit the floor running. You've got a summer window coming up that's in a few months' time. Liverpool are in a similar situation. They don't have a recruitment specialist for the summer. You know, the guy at Brighton, Sam Julie, went. Obviously, he's very highly rated. Why weren't we in for him? You know, when Stanley was the previous guy, went to Chelsea, and now they've got Jule as well. So how many do they want to Chelsea? Why didn't Liverpool react to that?
I'm sure that he would have snapped Liverpool's hands off as well, given Paul being a Scouser and a Liverpool, you know, youth player. And
I would love, if I were Liverpool, I'd be looking at Brentford's recruitment. I'll be looking at the people they've got. I'll be looking at who, you know, they tend to go, looking at Europe and elsewhere. The old German guy that came in for a while. They really got to get their finger out there on that side of things, because they're losing a manager and now they've got no recruitment person in charge for the summer. So they really have to start making that. They may have already done so. So if they have, then I'm wrong. But that needs to happen. So, you know, more and more clubs, I've spoken about this for years, need that model in place like we have with Baza. Do you know what I mean? And you know, obviously, director of football now, technical director, or it's head of football operations or whatever else. So it's going to be fascinating to watch it all play out.
Yeah, and I was just seeing this morning the rumors that Xabi Alonso is off to Bayern Munich, and Bayern Munich are making their move to try and take them off the table for Liverpool.
Yeah, seen that as well. And if Liverpool snoozed on that one, then they made a big mistake. With all due respect to Bayern Munich, Liverpool's a bigger club. And, you know, what's Xabi Alonso going to do? He's going to win where he is at the moment, the title. He's then going to go to Bayern Munich, where he's expected to win the title every year. This is Liverpool we're talking about. Like, with all due respect, I know Bayern are met this massive club and blah, 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 but it's not Liverpool. So Liverpool don't need to be asleep at the wheel on that. Somebody in the ownership needs to go to Germany and sit with him and go, you're our guy. You're our guy. You know, so maybe he doesn't want to follow Klopp. Maybe it's easier following Tuchel because he's failing. So who knows? Do you know what I mean? But he just seems to be the best of the next breed.
It feels like, you know, Liverpool have a process, and the process will end up them losing out because they're not moving fast enough, so that they are trying to be risk averse in taking their time to select the perfect person when he may have been staring them in the face all along and they didn't.
I worry. You look at the Red Sox fans in America and what they think of, like, the Fenway group and everything else, and how it's gone sour there, even though they won early on. I really worry once Jurgen goes, if we don't get the right person, we could end up in a situation where we're not going to have a good few years. So that's going to be pivotal. Liverpool are going to have a very important summer coming up. So let's see. What else have we got to cover before we go on five?
So one other thing I wanted to talk about was Michael Beale. Sunderland sacked Michael Beale after, what, 8-9 games? It seems like that was a relationship that, I mean, you've done it before, right? You know on day one almost. You know on day one this isn't going to work.
Yeah, it was a bad hire.
So do it rather than let it spiral out of control.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it wasn't well there. The players weren't having them. You know, you could tell. It's just nothing went right from day one. It wasn't a popular hire with the fans for whatever reason. He seems to have had a great career. I mean, he's worked for Gerrard, obviously. He's got Rangers. He's got the job at Rangers, QPR. Yeah, he's got Sunderland. He's had three great jobs. His agent's magnificent.
And he only did partially okay at QPR, didn't he?
Yeah. For like half a season, you know. So I don't know, you know, obviously a very good coach. A lot of those don't translate to being brilliant managers, and so far he hasn't. So I'd be surprised if he got another shot at the title, because he's kind of like he's flailed out at three clubs now, and three massive clubs. So who knows, you know, maybe he's got Gary Monk's agent.
He was accused of having a Twitter burner account, apparently. So
I saw it all. He got caught, yeah.
Isn't that something that's do managers have, you know, alias accounts on social media?
It'd be like me having a DMAC in account. I mean, as if I'd have the energy for it. I don't know. Maybe it's someone in his family, maybe whatever. Yeah. Look, I saw all of that, you know. Let's not rain on the guy, you know, heavier. You know, he's obviously fucking had a hard time at Sunderland and it hasn't worked for him. The only, you know, good news is he's got some serious payoffs, so he'll be a wealthy man. And he will definitely be back in coaching. I'll be amazed if he's not out with Gerrard again, even though I know Dean Holden went out there. So he will be absolutely fine. But football is just ruthless like that. And I think Sunderland made the right call. That just wasn't a good fit. It'll be interesting to see what they do next. I know they've got their assistant till the end of the season, but I finished off on Netflix, The Sunderland Until I Die, where they kind of did a third season based around their promotion and filled in the gaps. So cleverly done the way they did it. So it's a shame, because Sunderland were having a really good season. I'm not sure they're going to make the playoffs now. Do you know what I mean? Because of obviously all that, you know, the unsettlingness that's gone on there. But
they've still come on leaps and bounds over the last, you know, two or three years.
Massive football club. They have an identity like us. They play a certain way. And I think that's where they've had a problem with the manager. And it's tough, you know. If Darren left for a bigger club, me trying to pick a manager and staff that do what we want to do and the way we play, it's not as easy as it would be before. So, you know, they're all tough things. So you always have to give a club. I'm going to give them credit for making a decision quick, because it needed to be quick. It didn't work. It was a bad call in the first place, and they got to hold their hands up. Sometimes you get it wrong. You know, I got it wrong. I brought McCann back. It was a bad call. It was a bad call. There's no disrespect to him. It just wasn't a good fit, and it was a bad call. And sometimes you make bad calls, and you just have to own them and move on.
Well, the last thing I just want to mention is a good news story, and it's about Barnett. We've talked about Barnett quite a bit on the pod, just Barry's relationship and your relationship as a club with bringing some of their players through to the Posh. Their chairman this week talked about moving back to the district and rebuilding very close to Underhill.
Seen that. No, that's great news. And listen, Tony's a clever guy. He's a great setup at Barn at the moment. Well, sorry, where they moved to. Very well-run club. Wealthy guy. Knows what he's doing. and I saw all the plans and everything else. If anyone's going to make it happen, he will make that happen. So good luck to them. You know, I'd like to see them get back in the league. I'd like to see them do what they're doing with the stadium and keep producing their from Mason Clarks and Jack Taylors for us to take. So, you know, they're all the key ingredients.
It's a shame that their striker that's banging them in right now is, what, 28, 29 years old? It's
29. Yeah. Forget it. So, yeah. But, you know, our next episode, we should talk about it, end of season recruitment plans and plan A's and plan B's, because I'm obviously getting stuck into that right now, you know, already for next season. I think it's an important part of the process of, you know, what you do next. So, but look, I'll say to the fans, we won't be back for another week or so. Sorry to the Bradford fans. Good luck to the Posh fans. You know, hopefully you go out and get your tickets. It's a busy time coming up now. People need to hold their nerve, don't panic, you know, good or bad. You know, I've seen it so many times after 18 years. You're written off 1 minute, you're back the next minute. You're, you know, 3 seconds from Wembley, 4-0 up and Sheffield Wednesday and stuff. You know, all these things can happen. This is the football world we live in. It's why we do it. It's why we're in it. We love it. God bless everyone. Take care, and we'll speak to you soon.
All right, then. Talk to everybody later. We'll be back a couple of weeks' time. And again, keep questions coming in. We'll keep them stacked up when we have a little bit more time to pose them to Dara. So until next time, we will talk to you soon.
All the best.